Hello, and welcome to another episode of A Legion of Three.
I'm Rob.
I'm Glenn.
I'm John. And tonight we're going to talk about Liars Do.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, before we go any further, there's going to be spoilers. There's
Lots of spoilers.
There's going to be potty language.
Well, not too much of that. I mean, we don't drop F-bombs, if I can help it.
There's some potty language in the story itself.
Yep.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Yeah.
They say words like traitor.
Lupercal.
Heretic.
Love it. All right. So this story is from the Age of Darkness collection. It's quite a few years old at this point. Quite a few. In Horusy terms, it's quite a few years old. Age of Darkness is like book 10.
Yeah, it's pretty early.
Yeah. So some of the stuff in here is a little bit interesting just from the perspective of the timeline is unclear, although it's probably mid to late Heresy, I would say. It's not super clear exactly when it takes place. And oddly, for Heresy's story, there are exactly zero Space Marines. And again, spoiler warning, in this story.
It's pretty interesting how this all unfolds. So, but, you know, I guess it can be somewhat believable.
Yeah, it's... What's interesting is that it really shows you the power of sowing chaos and discord and fear. Just the fear of the unknown and the fear of being left behind are so pervasive and powerful tools in the hands of the right or the wrong person. So Glenn, start us off.
All right, so Liars Do, we take place on a agri world known as Verger Moss 2. It's far, far off the axis of the Imperial Core Worlds and the Ultima Segnum, and it's in the Dominion of Storms. It has a population of less than 1 million people. So basically, the Imperium has a planet that they use just for farmers. They farm, there's a humongous, they call it a skyhook, sends all the crops up, everything that needs to go on the ships, and just gets sent on out. So with this few people on a huge world and no real government other than in one sector, you can see how things can, you know, and them being so far out, how they can just be kind of left on their own and left to their own devices and then start coming up with things just off of nothing. So, but the story starts with the Imperium speaks. They get a message through the telegram about what is going on in the Imperium and what's going on with the war. Someone else want to jump in?
Take it, John.
You go ahead, bro.
All right, fine. So it starts. It says, today the prologue rang an ominous note, the familiar turning sinister. The main body of the message began. Somewhere far over their heads, at the summit of the Skyhook, was the planet's lone astropath. The Psyker's sole duty was to parse news into palatable forms and send it down the telegraph. This is Terra calling, and with grave import. Make all citizens aware and know this grim certainty. The battle has broken the Eternity Gate. The Imperial Palace falls as Terra burns around it. It is our great sorrow to announce that the Emperor of Mankind lies dead at the hand of Horus Lupercal, Warmaster. So, Heresy's over. Good game.
This being in Book 10.
Yeah.
A lot of people were like,
what?
Wait a minute.
So I think it's obvious that they knew that there was something going on. And they knew that, you know, Horus Lupercal had something to do with it. They weren't sure that it would all be over so fast. Because their reaction isn't, you know, wait, what happened? It's not, he's a traitor, you know, and he's taken over. It says, some of the townsfolk began to weep, others cradled their heads, and tried to deny the voice's words. One man laughed, a humorless bark of utter disbelief. And then there were the others, who looked on and said nothing, only nodding, as if they had known all along that this day would come. So some of them, you know, they probably heard that Horus had turned traitor, and, you know, you've got these people that are like, well, I was rooting for him the whole time.
So I was just reviewing this, and it does say that it's been going on for 2 years that they've been aware of the Heresy. Now, that doesn't have any bearing on how long the Heresy's been going on, because it's unlikely that the Imperium was sharing all the news in the earliest days, and we don't even know when they acknowledged it to these podunk backwater planets.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to bring up earlier. That's one of the greatest strengths of the Imperium. Strengths, I use the air quotes.
Yeah.
Ignorance. They wield ignorance like a weapon, and right now it's being turned against them because, what's the guy's name? The Alpha Legion operative.
Mendex.
Mendax, thank you. Good grief. Mendax starts wielding information as a weapon against the people of Verdurmos II, and because of their ignorance, he's able to use it with impunity.
Yeah, well, Leon is the first person that we kind of really get introduced to here, and he loves the Imperium, and he is questioning it the whole way, hearing this message. And he even goes and talks to Mendax, tries to find out what's going on. We learn that Mendax is someone who is kind of being a little shady with, you know, what he's telling about himself. He's shown up out of nowhere. He's made polite with the locals. He actually has moved into a room at Mendax's parents or his dad's house. I mean, at Leon's parents' house, his dad's house. And Leon is kind of, you know, enthralled by him because he knows so much. He's been to Terra. He's from Terra. And as we learn more about Leon, we just learn how much more he just loves the Imperium. And you can see that, you know, Mendax, you know, the off-worlder, is learning how to talk like the locals, how he's being able to fit in. And we see really quick that, you know, things are a little amiss.
Well, Mendax claims to be from Terra, but I don't think he actually is.
That's true.
And it doesn't really matter from the point of the view. He's said it to impress the boy, and he's done a great job of impressing the boy. And through the boy, he's learning a lot of the pulse of the local towns, as much as the boy knows, you know, now is open to him. By the by, I looked up the term Mendax, the name. It's from Latin. It's the original word is mendum, underlies the word Mendax, meaning lying, deceitful, and then mendicant is a word that's also derived, which is beggar. So you sort of see both of those aspects in this guy because, you know, he's come across as, I mean, he throws money around a little bit, but he also comes across as a poor remembrancer, even though he ain't no remembrancer. He's got the skills of one. He's obviously, he's got a skilled painting hand, but that's not really what he plays with.
Right. Now, they get this telegram, and then there's nothing else. They can't get any communications to go in or out. They're receiving nothing else. They're just getting static. So some of the local townspeople decide, all right, well, someone needs to go and find out what's going on. So one guy goes out to try to find out, go to the capital, O1, and find out what's going on. This is all happening at 44, Settlement 44.
Which is the location of the Skyhook.
In the center, basically, because they talk about that, I think, is it 86 or 88? Is the furthest one from the headquarters.
Yeah.
87. Ice Wheat Farms up on 87. So yeah, it's right dead smack in the middle, which is where the Imperium would put a skyhook.
Orbital elevators need a certain degree of, they need a stable Lagrange point to work. Otherwise, the gravity does not work in your favor. It's a whole thing. I've read a lot about orbital elevators and why we haven't gotten one on Earth yet, because it would sure make our life easier getting into space if we had one.
It sure would. When I read this, I was reminded of the two things. The one was Halo, the movie, Halo movie, where they're on the planet where they're training, and they've got a sky hook there, which was a nice visual. And also the story of later on in the Heresy with Mars and how they were trying to, you know, run stuff up to orbit to try and salvage it from Mars before Mars fell. Spoilers.
Yeah. If you didn't know that, you might be late coming to the Horus Heresy.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about next?
All right, so Leon tells Mendax about the telegraph, and Mendax plays it off. Hey, you know, maybe it's not true, or, you know, things change, and, you know, it's not a big deal. We don't know what's happening yet. And so, you know, that's not an answer that Leon was expecting. And then Leon talks to his father, and his father is like, no, it doesn't matter. All that matters is what we're doing right here, right now. Don't worry about it. But the area of 44, they're in freak out mode. They're arguing with each other. Nothing's came to blows yet, but they are 100% just freaking out because the Space Marines are coming, and then they see fireballs in the sky, and now it's just one more thing to make them freak out. The telegraph, lack of communication, now the Space Marines are coming in drop pods. So it's just piling on and piling on and piling on, and they're getting more and more and more freaked out. And that's just 44. So you have to assume the same thing's happening all over the place.
Right. The chaos and discord that's being sown here in just a few words. I mean, it's not even like there's a lot that's come down to scare them. The idea that the Imperium has fallen, the idea that something is invading this world, something, and that they're not getting further communication, all of that has just preyed upon their existing fears and, you know, caused them to freak the heck out. It's sort of like, you know, anybody could see it coming, but no one can stop it even if they wanted to. And clearly no one is even able to stop it. Although the one guy who is a descendant of an Imperial Army trooper, not even an officer, you know, the one guy who's got a Laslock, it's 140 years old, tries to take command, orders people around, tries to shoot the person he thinks is an invader. It happens to be the guy who tried to get information for them from the planetary capital. Shoots him dead. They never get the information out of him. Good job. Well done.
Yeah, the story jumps from... So that when we first start the story, we're at base time. All right, we're at the broadcast.
Start of panic.
The start of the next chapter in this short story jumps us back to broadcast minus 8 weeks. So 8 weeks before we have the broadcast. And we start learning about the operation of the Skyhook and what it does. And then also talks about how Mendax was able to get from 01 to 44 without anyone seeing him, unless he wanted them to see him. And then how he infiltrated the town and made friendly and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so we do see this story jumps back and forth between the start. It starts off with the broadcast that sends everybody into a tizzy. Then we jump back and we see kind of the build up to it and what Mendax's role, how it starts to show his true colors, I guess. And then we jump forward and we see the panic is in full effect and, you know, it's growing as time goes on. And they start worrying that, you know, if this is going to fall, then they have to make a decision. They have to be either for the Emperor, they have to be for Horus. If they're for the Emperor, they've always been for the Emperor. Why would they turn their back on the Emperor? On the other hand, is it worth dying because we're for the Emperor? He doesn't care about us. We're just one of, you know, possibly hundreds of agricultural worlds. He's never been here. He would never come here. We've never even seen a Space Marine before, you know. And then, you know, they start to question. They're like, well, but is our loyalty that cheap? Could we just, you know, abandon the man that founded this empire for this, you know, usurper, the War Master? But do you want to die because you won't bend the knee? And it's, you know, it's back and forth, and it's just like they start just, A, you know, they form different camps. The two camps just argue with each other, and everybody's going, maybe they're right, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't know, maybe. And then we have to defend the Skyhook, and they have, like, literally no weapons. They have, you know, a couple of rusty rifles for shooting varmints and farm implements, because there's no militia. They have, like, a lawman that comes out from the capital. It says once a lunar, so that's, like, every month. It's crazy.
The other thing I think we should mention here, we sort of skimmed over part of the pro-imperial propaganda that they were broadcasting. It says, all is well. The turncoat War Master is being beaten back. There are victories at Kalf and Meritol and Cygnus Prime. You have nothing to fear. The Emperor will be victorious. All three of those are Imperial defeats. Kalf, you know, they lost thousands upon thousands of Ultramarines, just tore the strength out of the 500 worlds of Ultramar. Meritol was a defeat. Cygnus Prime, we almost lost the entirety of the Blood Angels.
Yes, and the world ate itself, too, for good measure.
Oh, there's that, too.
We don't even have that world anymore. That's not even a defeat. It's a hole in the galaxy.
It's just gone. Didn't it open up another warp rift over there?
It may have. But it's, you know, it's way on the eastern fringes. No one cares.
Nobody cares.
We don't even go there. We don't like to talk about that place.
That's the other side of the tracks.
Yes, literally.
So even if they do get some message out or from the outside world and they say, oh, no, well, you know, Kalf, the word bearers attack the Ultramarines, and they're going to start questioning everything that they've ever heard. So.
Right.
And there's some truth to this, because in the early days after Istvan IV, you know, the War Master sent out his basically ships that just broadcast, you know, you now belong to the War Master, kneel or die. And any place that didn't kneel, they bombarded, and that was death. And it was so like all these planets on the way between Istvan and Earth were given a choice that you will either, you know, accept the War Master as your Lord and Savior, or you will burn in the fires of his destruction. And right. But then people who knelt, here come the Shattered Legions, the Iron Hands, the Salamanders, the Raven Guard, land on your world. You never saw the War Master. You never even saw one of his Space Marines. They'll burn you for betraying the Emperor. When you were like, what choice did you really have? You could have died then, or you die now. It's not exactly a pleasant option on either side.
Right.
And all these places had to make this choice. So, you know, the thing that they're freaked out about in some way makes sense. I mean, they don't really know that this went on out there. But you can kind of imagine that you do feel the pull between these two polar entities, which again are so far beyond you that you can barely fathom them. The Emperor is pretty much unfathomable to Marines, let alone, you know, common man. But yes, the wrong decision might mean death, not just for you, but your entire world.
Yeah.
That's a big scale. That's a big scary.
So we learned that Mendax recorded this transmission, and once he got back to his room, he took out some crystal controllers, and he had a suitcase full of stuff, and he took apart, dismantled, rearranged, and totally remade the broadcast to be able to send out what was that we heard in the very first chapter. So he created this whole entire thing, and while he's there, and he winds up his sleeves, you see a Hydra tattoo. So he's
an Electu right there, right?
Yeah, he is a Alpha Legion operative.
So how many? All right, I don't know. In this, I think this is the first time we see them in the Heresy in Book 10. But throughout the series now, how many different operatives have we seen that have at least a pretty good starring role? I mean, we have them obviously in Talarn. We have them in the Siege of Earth or the lead up to the Siege of Earth. Praetorian of Dorne.
Yep.
Actually, some of those, I'm not sure how many of those were operatives and how many of those are Marines. I know the women both are obviously operatives. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
those are Marines in Unremember Empire.
Yeah, the ones that try to kill
Gillibon.
Roberta Gurley, man.
Hey. Be nice. Be nice. He's our only hope in 9th edition, maybe. Till the lion comes back. And, you know, that's not better. Oh, shots fired. Casualties reported.
Is there enough conditioner in the universe at this point for the lion to come back? I don't think there is.
Casualties mounting. All right. So there's another. We are jumping around because this story kind of jumps around too. So it's encouraged us to do the same. You know, as people are freaked out, they get another recording that comes out that's kind of disrupted and broken up. And it says that the governor of the planet is dead. He has taken his own life in fear of the invasion that, you know, they think is coming from things falling out of the sky. And they don't know what to do. There's no plan for dead governor. They're so far removed from, you know, any kind of succession plan or whatever that this is just even worse. Now, here's a question for you guys. Is this a real thing? Do you think the governor actually killed himself, or is this just more propaganda coming from Mendax? We don't really know. We don't know.
And yeah. The person who would have brought us that information got shot while he was on his way back from that town.
Yes, and that's a good point. So that may have been circulated only after it couldn't have been countermanded. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I mean, either way, the same effect is had, whether it's real or it's fake. People freak out even more. Like, the meter goes up.
Yeah.
If our leaders are gone, what do we do? Does it even matter what we do? All right. So let's jump back one more. There's a broadcast minus 2 weeks that I think is just a really fascinating thing. And it's just a conversation between Mendax and Leon. But it's an allegory to all of the heresy. And which one of you would like to read it? Not the whole thing, but the most important pieces.
Which part were you talking about?
Minus
2 weeks over?
Yes, that one.
Okay.
About the fathers and sons.
Let me find the spot.
All right. I'll help you out a little bit.
You go for it.
So I'm jumping in kind of in the middle. We don't see eye to eye, Leon sighed. He thinks the Imperium ignores us out here in the periphery. He tells me that it's all far away and unreachable. Terra and all those things. That is as much true as it is false, said Mendax. But I imagine Esquire Keiter, which is Leon's father, would not hear that. He leaned in. Do you think he is right? No, Leon answered immediately. His temper began a slow burn. He doesn't see what I see. He's blind, too set in his ways, and he wants me to follow in his footsteps. I've tried to get him to see things like I do, but he doesn't want to hear it. He thinks, the man paused, I think he believes I'm turning on him. A traitor to your kin, Mendek said the word without weight. It's strange, isn't it? How fathers and sons can be so close and at the same time be so far apart. He paused and looked away. Do you imagine that Horace Lupercal shared a measure of what you feel now, Leon? I mean, this is just a father and a son disagreeing about relatively little stuff. I mean, the son is a dreamer and the father is a realist. And on this backwater agro world, nobody knows the name of. I mean, we'll never hear this name again, I don't think, in all of Imperial history. And yet it's an allegory, here's the word, between Horus and the Emperor. A father and a son, you know, not seeing eye to eye. I mean, obviously there's a little bit more weight in Horus.
There's a lot more weight.
All right. I grant you that. But still, you know, you can see, and this is a very common thing throughout history. There's been all these betrayals of ideas, and oftentimes it's father and son. I'm actually thinking of the Holy Grail, which is Arthur and not his son, but it's the guy who falls in love with his wife, Lancelot. He treats Lancelot like a brother, but also kind of a son because he is younger. He falls in love with Guinevere, and he destroys Camelot. I mean, the whole thing has a lot of parable to the Horus Heresy, just, you know, from this position of trust. The king, you know, this is my best man. How could he betray me? And of course he betrays you because you put him in a position where he could.
Because the booty.
He loved Arthur so much that he also loved his wife too much. So, yeah. What are you going to do? I think it's neat. I think it's a neat little framework inside of this story that just calls out all of the heresy. I mean, not obviously in the same detail, but, you know, it is something that all men must face. The question, may I defy my father? The War Master's defiance has cost the lives of millions, Leon blurted. Mendax looked away again. All choices have their price.
Yeah.
I wrote that down, too.
So good. So good.
All choices have their price. Wow.
And it's defiance. He is defying his father for reasons. And I mean, I know we have the whole Chaos Gods or whatever else, but Horus, and now let's go back to Brutus and Caesar. Horus was ambitious. Horus didn't understand when his father left him to go play around in the basement. And why shouldn't, you know, Horus run the Imperium? He knows it better. He's out here bleeding on the front line. What's the Emperor doing? Playing in the basement.
And then he has other people in his ear. Oh, you should be in charge. You would be a great ruler.
All the
yes men.
Yeah.
Getting in his head.
And then just a little knife stroke and everything goes to hell. All right. Sorry. There's my interlude. Please carry on.
Nice. The story jumps again, broadcast plus 22 hours solar, and basically the town is starting to break down. People are shooting at each other, people are breaking glass, they're probably looting, they're probably, you know, stealing supplies and making a run for the hills.
The enemy is coming, let's steal the TV!
Right, yeah. parts of the town are on fire. Leon doesn't know what to do. He's basically hanging out in his bedroom.
That's what his dad told him to do, but you gotta figure this is less than 24 hours, not one day. That's all it took. One day.
One day and a dozen words.
Yeah.
So Ames, Leon's father, tells him to stay home, and Leon noticed that his dad went to the basement, got his gun, and left because things are not doing good in town. Leon hears some commotion going on. Nothing loud, nothing too loud, but he hears something. He hears someone leave. And so he looks, and he's looking in. He sees Mendax leaving in the shadows. avoiding the lights. His path, he's going straight for the Skyhook. So what does Leon do? Leon's, I gotta follow him.
Right.
He follows Mendax to the Skyhook, up the Skyhook, which Leon's never been on before, and onto the station. Leon sees that there's one ship, a little warp cutter, and he follows Mendax all the way to the Astropath's chambers.
And this is further than he's been in his entire life. And probably, you know, I think it says that his family's owned this house for 7 generations. None of them have ever been up here. None of them have gone so far. And he's doing it out of curiosity, out of fear, out of wanting to know what's really going on. But he's gone so far. It's something that his family, you know, his father certainly would not do this.
No.
Well, just going into the compound of the Skyhook is a criminal offense.
Right.
It's all automated. It's all done by
computer. No humans necessary.
No humans necessary. It will run for 1,000,000 years and need minimal maintenance. And even if all the people on the planet died, it would still keep doing the exact same thing.
So he gets up to the Skyhook station and follows Mendax, where Mendax goes and basically deactivates a stasis field around the Astropath, who he had trapped since we don't know when, I guess when he first arrived. He had been on Virgin Moss 2 for almost 2 solar months, yet yep. For the woman, only seconds would have passed. From her viewpoint, he would have never left. She wakes up as the field deactivates, and she's in a panic. Please don't kill me. He says, I'll let you live, but only if you do something for me. He told her, send a message, only that. The Astropath shook her head, and he held up the last pistol, pointing it at her face. She looked away and then sighed. It is not something that can be done at a whim. There must be preparations. Certain readiness is needed. Mendax held up his hands. Don't lie to me. You can transmit at a moment's notice if need be. I'm not some administratum tech that you wish to baffle with the mystery of your talent. He tapped the barrel of the pistol against his temple. I know how you work. Her eyes widened. Without correct foundation, I could be injured. The warp eats the unprepared mind. Please do not force me. She was a psyker of only minor talent. That was undeniable. The fact that she was posted here to this backwater instead of to a starship or a colony of real note confirmed that. The Astropath's days would have been the lonely, tedious string of parsing news from the core and the occasional communion with a comrade aboard a passing ship. Mendax's unexpected arrival was practically a gift. Yeah, some gift.
Right. The gift that keeps on giving.
That's right. He pressed the last pistol muzzle into her cheek and regarded her impassively. I have other means to send this on my ship, but I would prefer that you do it. If your answer remains no, this will end now. At last, the woman gave a nod. Very well. To where do you wish me to speak? Mendax reeled off a set of spatial coordinates, committed to his memory, and watched in amusement as the psyker's expression became one of shock. There? She asked. But that's beyond the lines of... It is for his ears? Mendax returned the nod. The War Master. Yes, after a fashion. He gestured with the gun. Send exactly this, no different, 7 words. Tell me, she said, glowering. Mission complete. Proceeding to next target, Mendax. So we get that from the perspective of Mendax and the Astropath. And Leon is still watching from behind, somewhere on the station, but not close enough that he's discovered. I think that Mendax knows that he's there, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
That comes up.
So.
Mendax, you know, nothing has surprised him in all of this. This is all completely routine to him. He has seen worlds like, I mean, he talks about them when he first arrives. He's never been to this world before, but he knows it intimately because it's just like the rest. You know, the idea of this world is matched dozens, if not hundreds of places across the galaxy.
You've got these people on board the planet of Virgin Moss that are going to spend generations there and never step foot anywhere else, let alone outside of their own town for the most part.
Right.
And then you've got Mendax, who's been to so many of these worlds, it's like commonplace.
Yep.
So the Astropath knows that he's Alpha Legion. She saw the mark on his arm. She also calls him a traitor swine and tells him he will not succeed. He's already succeeded. The day is done. This planet is going to be for the War Master. Nothing's going to change that at this point. Mendax, more than likely, I think the transmission was sent to the Alpha Legion, Alpharius, and then it'll get over to the War Master. And Mendax is just one of the Alpha Legion operatives that are doing this, of dozens. So they're just taking over world after world after world after world.
Not taking over, kind of efficiency. Just ruining. They just wrecked the place. They're just creating chaos. So it's of no value to anybody anymore, but at least it's not on the Imperium side.
They're removing pieces from the playing field.
Exactly. The chessboard is being cleaned. And yeah, I mean, the Imperium has always had the numbers advantage, but if you do stuff like this, not so much.
You take away the breadbasket, then somewhere a manufacturium planet dies, starves, or somewhere a hive world starves, and you know, you do this enough and you cause enough damage everywhere. It's like cancer.
There's an old parable saying something: for the want of a nail, a horse was lost. For the want of the horse, the man was lost. For the want of the man, the battle was lost. For the want of the battle, the war was lost. You know, it shows that little things domino upward.
Yeah.
And this is like that. This is, we're going through the Imperium. We are not invading their worlds. We are thinking we're making the worlds think that they're being invaded and watching them freak out and fall apart, and the War Master's will is done.
Yeah. So we get the explanation as to what the drop pods, air quote drop pods, were. They're just small asteroids captured from the Oort cloud and kicked into the atmosphere by drones. So that made their sky, the stars falling, that everybody took to be drop pods. Everything, all of it, the whole thing was a lie. She calls him a liar and a walking falsehood, but he's won.
All in a day's work. Literally a day's work. I mean, it took him a while to set things up, but...
Yeah, but once he got the dominoes falling, they just...
They crashed.
It took down everything. So Mendax, you know, kills the astropath. He gets into his ship. He sees Leon, tells him, I just wanted to see how far you could come, as I never get to have someone see me actually do my work.
He wanted an audience.
Yes, more challenging. And Leon says, well, I'm just going to tell everyone down on the planet what you've done and that it's all fake. And he said, no, you're not. By the time you get back down there, everyone's already going to be on the side of Horus. And if you talk, they're just going to kill you.
Oh, but we skipped over. There's a great line. The War Master has more important things to do than send his men to this dreary corner of the galaxy. Are you so arrogant as to think it would be worth a Primarch's effort? Do you really believe he would commit ships to the capture of a farm?
It's awesome.
Nice.
They think so highly of themselves. They think that their loyalty one direction or the other matters. And A, it doesn't. And B, their effectiveness is destroyed by one man in one day who's moved on to do it again somewhere else.
Right, but Leon's father, who he's in such revolt against, said the exact same thing. They don't care about us. We don't matter. No one's going to come here. And nobody would listen.
Yep. He was right the whole time. And Leon, you know, was so mad at him for, A, not taking a side, obviously the Imperium side, and B, you know, thinking he knew everything, but he was right. So, you know. And again, that may be something, too, with the Emperor and Horus, ..
Right.
Hmm.
So then Mendax detaches from the station, and he takes off, sets out his coordinates for the next planet he's going to, turns on the stasis field generator, and then programs it to wake him up 1 week before he makes planetfall, ready for the next mission.
And the story goes on.
So, yes, a very, very interesting story. The way that one person, not even in a space marine.
Without firing a single shot. I mean, he killed one person.
He fired one shot.
Well, that was not consequential to the world. I mean, they won't know that the astropath is dead, possibly ever. I mean, we don't know if Leon is going to make any impact on the story later.
Well, they already said he's not. Because if he says anything, he's going to be killed.
Well, but I mean, he may not even tell them that the astropath is dead. He may not even go back down to the planet. Who knows? He may just die out there.
He may, may figure out a way to kill himself up there, or... I mean, the astropath had to have some supplies, so he could stay there for a while, but who knows?
Right, and not to mention the things that are inside of the pods that could actually destroy vermin and stuff. He is not wearing a suit like Mendax was.
Yeah,
and it detects him as being some sort of vermin. It might actually scald him or kill him.
It could try, but the downward carts, it wouldn't bother. It's only the upward ones that would.
That's the thing. When Mendax landed, he got sprayed, but survived it because he had an enviro suit.
Yep.
Anyway, we passed over that. So, all right. The point of the story is
last lines of the story.
Oh, go ahead. So finish up, and then we'll digest.
Leon Keiter leaned forwards and let his forehead touch the cool glassaic of the armored viewport. His hands splayed palm open either side of his face. He looked down, not daring to glance toward the threatening dark, watching the agri world beneath him. Night covered the landscape, but there was light, here and there in scattered bands and broken commas of color, light from the fires of burning towns, yellow, orange, and hellish in shade, falling everywhere he turned his gaze. In the cold and the silence, Leon watched the distant flames spread.
So there may not be anything left of this agri world to come down to, even if he does survive coming down. I mean, there's lots of things not good in this ending. It's a sad, sad day for Leon and his world and his dad.
So a lot of this story reminded me of the Twilight Zone episode, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, which is the one where there's like a bang and then the power goes out and then all of the neighbors in the neighborhood like slowly ratchet up the paranoia until basically it becomes a witch hunt and they're threatening to kill each other and basically eat each other alive during the episode. And there's a lot of parallels, I thought, to that episode of The Twilight Zone. I don't know if you guys have seen that one or not, but
I have not.
I have not either.
Okay. Basically, it's the same idea. You know, something happens, the normal goes away, and now, unfortunately, you know, people are, we're stupid animals. We tend to panic. And in our panic, we do stupid stuff. So, kind of the same
monsters
thing.
Was us all along.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. I mean, that's the biggest thing of that is through, you know, he manipulated people. He 100%, you know, preyed upon their fears and their concerns or whatever else. But he didn't make anybody kill anybody or set fires or break out fights or whatever. I mean, he never came to anybody and said, you will now follow the War Master. He just made it seem like that was the only choice possible.
Right. And Mendax had made mention earlier that he'd been trained well to do his job.
Yep. Considering that this is not the first rodeo and that, you know, he's done how many. Did it say how many he'd finished?
No.
Just on to the next one.
On to the next one, and that there's dozens of other operatives doing the same thing.
Right. It's a big galaxy. I mean, there's a million worlds, because they say, you know, later there's a million Marines, one Marine per world, and this world will never see one, and it may not even exist. Like I said, it doesn't come up any time later, so it may just burn itself out.
Well, that if he follows the same MO on every world or a similar MO on every world, he basically leaves them blind.
Yep.
Because if he's killing the astropaths as he leaves, you know, there's no word coming in or out from any of these planets. So the only way for anybody to find out about the planet is to either dock or land and start an investigation. So,
yeah,
and if you have a stirred up paranoid bunch of people on the planet, that's not a good idea.
To the Imperium, all they know is this world went dark. That world went dark.
Lights out.
It's another 10 more today.
But our ship showed up and it got more supplies. That's weird.
No word from anybody.
Yeah. This last batch of food was a little burnt.
Extra crispy chickens.
All these popcorn was pre-popped.
Nice.
Sidebar. Astropaths. This is before we got astropaths more fleshed out. To know that they only send symbols. They can't really send words and complicated ideas, at least not easily. And that's still, I mean, I still have trouble with that as a concept too, because I know that, you know, like this symbol means this thing and that they have like a pictogram dictionary. So if you send cat, like hieroglyphics, cat, bird, pyramid, eye, it actually means meet me, you know, at the town center by 5 o'clock. But it'd be hard to communicate stuff like the emperor is fallen, Horus is triumphant or whatever through current astropath discussed technology or methods, I guess.
It's in the script.
Yeah, yeah. I know. They can hand wave anything if they want to, and they often do. Don't worry.
They just send it out letter by letter. It's a pain.
Yeah, we've heard it in other stories where people go, spilling. Did you double check what this meant? Yes, we went over it a couple times.
Right.
Or they're not finished deciphering it yet, what it means. It's like,
I You know, that's a really good point. If they can send pictograms, why can't they have some kind of sign language of, you know, letter spelling?
Right.
I mean, it takes a long time, but it's like, the emperor says retreat.
I mean, come on. In the movie Mission to Mars, they were able to use, or no, The Martian, excuse me. In the movie The Martian, they were able to use a form of... Well, not Morse code, but a form of a alphabet in order to send back and forth messages.
I've not seen that yet. I haven't read the book either. That's sad.
Kind of the way that I interpreted the astropath imagery, because we've only gotten a couple of glimpses of it. I think one of them was in Pandorax. Have you read that one yet?
I'm not sure.
More than likely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, it's images, and then the images have meanings.
Exactly. So yeah, that's how I kind of pictured it. It's a standoff, and there's two guys pointing guns at each other.
Yeah. A victory would be, a guy holding his arms up in victory. You know?
Right. Exactly.
And, like, some worlds have their own symbols. Like, I think the Iron Hands homeworld, there's a mountain that's symbol for Medusa.
Sure. And like Stargate, you know how Stargate had the different symbols?
Yeah. Yeah. The hieroglyphs. Yeah.
Same idea. That's kind of what I was thinking of during all this, or when thinking about astropaths, I should say.
I personally am a huge fan of James Swallow, who wrote this story. And a lot of his, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's about him, or his writing personally, but he's one of my favorites for the whole Horus Heresy series.
What else has he done?
Almost all the Garrow stories.
Okay.
He did Nemesis.
Yep. That's a great book. Yep. So I think, I'm just going to stab at the dark. One of the things you like about it is that he's good at showing kind of the hidden war, the underbelly side of things. It isn't, people on battlefields fighting, but people fighting kind of for hearts and minds in some cases. Garrow certainly is a lot like that. I mean, Garrow is a legion of one, dun, dun, dun. But he also has this very serious thing of, he's fighting for very personal reasons, not just because he loves the emperor, which he does, but, he was betrayed by his legion. There's right and wrong in the universe, and he's, only going to be on the side of right. So there's a lot of that stuff that is much more cerebral than physical combat. And Nemesis is full of that. I mean, Nemesis, most of that book is the setup for not much payoff.
Right.
Well, spoilers, they did nuke what's-his face. So.
Yes, but it wasn't their targets.
Well, we don't want to spoil it too much. So
no, not
yet. I'm going to call it what's-his face.
Yeah, but so that it's a great book. And, I mean, you learn a lot about the Assassinorum offices in there, but it's just not it's not where you think it's going.
It makes me really, really, really want to nut punch.
Go on, finish the thoughts. I really want to know where you're going with this now. So it's not me or Glenn. Well, I don't care about Glenn. Glenn, sorry, no, you're on your own.
Erebus is like the most deserving person in the entire
fake
history of man. That deserves to be nut punched with the hammer of Thor.
I'm not sure. Why would he even have any anymore? What's the purpose?
Reasons.
Okay.
But also,
aesthetics. Nudicles.
James Swallow came up with spear, and spear is like one of the most frightening things I've ever thought of or ever read about in the Warhammer universe. The idea of that type of psyker and, that type of bond between a human and a demon and just that perfect mix of psychic ability and also his special power, which, spoilers, he actually had a good chance of killing the Emperor just outright.
He was a very special case. And,
he was very special.
That's a great book, and I don't know that we're ever going to get to it because I'm not sure in our format how we're going to tackle books. They're going to take us forever and a day, but that would be a good one for us to go after. All right, what else? Has he written any other Alpha Legion stuff, Glenn?
Not that I know of.
Because he certainly got the chops for it. He's got the, you know, the sneaky subterfuge. It's not a Cold War, but it's a... I guess it's kind of a Cold War, but it's more just the underhanded, dirty stuff that the Alpha Legion loves so, so much.
Well, I mean, it's the way they prefer to fight.
Yeah, I mean, you won the fight if you can cut the enemy's legs out before he even knows you're there. I mean, that fight's over. He doesn't know it yet, but it's over.
That's the one thing I kind of agree with Alpharius is, you know, Alpharius gets up there with his brothers and they're like, oh, well, we're going to orbital bombard this planet. We're going to do this. We're going to drop troops. We're going to go in there. We're going to take it and we're going to have a big show of force. And Alpharius is like, you know, if you give me a week, I can just take this with like two dudes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, you could bomb it into rubble and you could make a big huge show of force, or you could just give me a couple of weeks. You know, there's a reference to it, and I don't remember what book it is, maybe you have it in front of you, but where one of the first official actions of the Alpha Legion, and I think they're paired up with like the Blood Angels and somebody else, and they're going after essentially a giant asteroid field which is infected with orcs. And the Alpha Legion basically makes they have the Blood Angels helping them by basically barricading or blockading the asteroid field on the outside. And all they do is every now and then, you know, like as the Blood Angels are sitting there waiting for further instructions, every now and then the Alpha Legion sends out a message that says, hold the line. And every now and then a bunch of orcs will try and make a break for it and leave and get obliterated by the Blood Angels. But it's never in an organized run. It's always them in a panic. And then all of a sudden, basically, the Alpha Legion come out the other side, and they're like, we're done. It's all good.
Are they basically pinballing all the asteroids together?
They basically had gone in, and I'm assuming what they did was they were pitting the orcs against the other orcs, but making the orcs think they were fighting somebody else.
Mm.
But it's Alpha Legion. Who knows? They could have been in there, you know, smashing skulls. But I choose to believe that they were in there using subterfuge and, you know, oh, well, you know, Grognak over there said your mom was a whore.
I'll show him.
That's right.
All you have to do is go to the centermost asteroid, or pick one, put some grav mines on it, and then have all the asteroids come slamming together. And even if not all of them come, you know, the ricochet effect of that will just cause... Now, granted, it'll also disrupt all shipping in the area for quite some time, as you've now taken a stable asteroid field and made it into a giant rock minefield. But the orcs will die, and that's what's important here.
That is. So I looked up Jane Swallow. So he wrote Flight of the Eisenstein, Nemesis, Fear to Tread.
That's a pretty good book, but it wasn't... It was so early that it's a little rough.
Yeah, Fear to Tread.
Great book.
He wrote Vow of Faith and Weapon of Fate for the Garrow series, and The Buried Dagger.
I haven't read that yet. That's a very late.
Really good.
Is that the last Heresy novel?
No.
I think it might be.
No, The Buried Dagger is right as they're getting to Sol.
That's like book 54 or 56 or something, and I think it's right before the Siege of Terra.
Right. Yes.
Okay. So it's the last of the Heresy books, and Siege of Terra is kind of a new series. Whatever. Okay. Yeah. I've not read it yet. I'm still actually in Talarn, so. All right, I think
I'm going to listen to that again. I that was a really good book.
Nice.
Cool. All right, so this was my pick. I was going to pick an Iron Warrior story, but I discovered that there's not any Iron Warrior short stories that are traitor that I wanted to talk about. I just felt like none of them... The novels are good. I mean, I like Perturabo, the way he comes across in Angel Exterminatus. Obviously, in Siege of Terra, he's amazing, doing the best he can with his very unhelpful brothers. But none of the short stories really spoke to me. And I want to talk about Iron Within, but it's Imperial. He's a loyalist.
Right.
So, yeah. So I picked this one instead just because it was a good follow-up to our Alpha Legion discussion last episode, which I know nobody else has heard yet, but you'll get there. Who's picking next time?
John is.
John. Well, all right. You've got at least a couple of days to sort it out, and then we have to all review it and then be prepared. Next time
You just talked about it. You just talked about the Iron Within.
You're picking that?
Barabbas D'Antioch.
Okay.
I feel insulted, but also amused. Yeah, he is. He really is.
The inverted fortress? He kills an Imperator Titan? Are you kidding me?
The Imperator Titan shouldn't have walked there, to be frank. Holds the Chardon hold for like a year and a half with 20 guys, 30
are
guys.
Are we going to do the whole story now?
No. We're just going to spoil it now.
Do the next one.
Yeah. But all right. Dude, good choice. Good choice.
Badass story. The dude welds the mask to his face. Like, how hardcore do you have to be to weld the mask on your face?
He's the good Dr. Doom.
Nice.
In many ways. We'll talk about it. All right. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate your time, and we hope you'll spend it with us again in a couple weeks when we talk about more Legion of Three.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.